Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer. 111-110. Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Panino, and I have with me today my very dear friend. You're all very familiar with her if you've been subscribed to this podcast for a while. If you're not, go back and listen to previous episodes with our, I'd like to consider you to be our in-house clinician, Hannah Heyman, who is also an instructor here at Street Cop Training, who does a lot of work in psychotherapy and whatever. Did I say the right word? The psychotherapy, correct?
Yeah, you could say psychotherapy, counseling, therapy, whatever. I'm casual with it.
And today we have discussed that we're going to discuss anxiety.
Yes, yes. So this is a really common thing that plagues, I would say, pretty much all of the population, but I think it's especially prevalent in the law enforcement community, mostly due to the differing or the different things that officers have to deal with that are maybe above or different than what the general population is dealing with.
All right. So I have questions about anxiety. I guess the first one is anxiety different for everybody?
Yes. I would say a lot of people experience anxiety differently, and what causes somebody anxiety is going to not be the same for everybody. So some people might get anxious over being in large crowds. Some people might be anxious over not having, you know, concrete plans or not knowing what's coming next. And other people, that doesn't bother them. That doesn't cause anxiety in them. Other people might have anxiety in relationships or, you know, just different situations in life. So I would definitely say it's different for everybody, and how somebody feels anxiety can be really, really different. So for some people, anxiety might just feel like racing thoughts, you know, or maybe they get stuck on a thought and they kind of just ruminate on it, meaning it circles in their head over and over again. For other people, anxiety is very physical. They feel it in their body. They feel jittery. They might feel like their heart is beating very fast or that they have heart palpitations of some kind. And for other people, anxiety really spikes for them. And they can actually get into what's obviously known as full-blown anxiety attacks, which is very physical and very all-consuming, both in the mind and the body. But I kind of look at anxiety, it's like a spectrum. And so, you know, first and foremost, it's important to understand that anxiety is part of the human spectrum of emotions. And therefore, you're never probably going to have a life that doesn't have anxiety ever. And so anxiety is a normal thing to experience. But when it becomes a problem that needs to be addressed is when you are feeling as if the anxiety is prohibiting with your ability to participate in your daily life. And so I think it's really important for people to kind of assess, like, where are they at maybe on the anxiety spectrum? Like, is it something they experience, but they're able to work through it? Or is anxiety something that's really kind of taking over and dictating how and what they are able to do with their lives?
When somebody is experiencing anxiety, yeah, maybe for the first time in their life, and they don't know what to do with it, is it fair to say that somebody can learn how to manage anxiety? And what are some management tools that we look to besides alcohol to manage anxiety?
Yeah, so anxiety is 100% manageable. And I think it's one of those things that it's important for people to kind of get on top of it very quickly, because anxiety can very much so become like a monster. And if it's not checked immediately, it does have the potential and the ability to overrun and overtake an individual. So I would say the first thing is start to notice when you feel the most anxious. I tell all of my clients, let your triggers be your teachers. So if you're in a situation or if you're experiencing something in life where you're feeling an increase or an uptick in anxiety, stop for yourself and ask, like, what's going on for me? what is it about this situation that's making me feel the most nervous, the most afraid, the most uncertain? Because getting to the root cause of what's triggering the anxiety is ultimately what's going to be really important to helping manage the anxiety. But there are a ton of techniques available to people that you can manage anxiety with. In my class, I actually talk a lot about this because a lot of what can be used to help manage anxiety is also things that we call nervous system regulation techniques. And it's really, anxiety is ultimately like a product of your nervous system telling you something's not right, I don't feel good, something's off. And so learning how to kind of manage and bring your nervous system back into a regulated state is ultimately what's going to help alleviate those symptoms that present as anxiety.
Why do people think that turning to alcohol is an answer to manage anxiety?
Because it's quick. It works really fast. It's socially acceptable. And ultimately, alcohol is something that, again, I think it's really just accepted. And so we've talked about this on previous podcasts, alcohol is our modern day society's answers to everything. You're happy, have a drink. You're sad, have a drink. You're stressed out, have a drink. You're not stressed out and you just want to chill and relax. Oh, wow, have a drink. So it's kind of just become society's catch-all. But from my perspective as a trauma therapist, alcohol at its root is almost always used to soothe a nervous system for some reason. So if you think about it, as somebody's walking into a party, they might not realize that they're nervous about being at the social gathering or that they feel self-conscious or insecure in any way. They just walk in and start drinking. But that drinking is not necessarily always to be social or to participate in what's going on. Oftentimes it's a subconscious desire to soothe out a nervous system that's kind of sending a message that something's not right for them in that moment. And again, it doesn't necessarily have to be something life-threatening. It can be something just as simple as, I feel socially awkward around people, or I'm nervous about what these people are going to think of me. And so from my perspective, almost always, alcohol is, and especially addiction, I shouldn't say alcohol, but addiction is almost always, it comes from what was originally a desire to soothe your nervous system being dysregulated.
Earlier, you'd mentioned an anxiety attack, also known as a panic attack. Is that correct?
Yeah.
If somebody's experiencing, well, first of all, can you explain what some of the symptoms of that may be and what to do to calm it at that time and what sometimes it's misinterpreted as?
Sure. So it's commonly misinterpreted as a heart attack because it can feel that intense for some people. Some people think that they're having a stroke or a seizure of some kind. But for a lot of, so it's kind of tough with all things with mental health, this should probably be stated too. It is a deeply personal journey and experience. So what I say might not be applicable to everybody, and you might be able to take parts of it and apply it to your life, but for other people, it might not work for them at all. That's okay. It just means you have to find a different avenue to help yourself. But generally speaking, some things that people can do when they're experiencing a panic attack, and it might feel different for everybody. Some people need movement. So for some people, if they feel like they're experiencing a panic attack, they might start to feel something like claustrophobia. And therefore, it's not going to be good for them to maybe like just sit still and deep breathe through the exercise. Maybe they need to walk around and pace. For other people, the thought of walking around and having other people witness them have this panic attack, that's too much. And so they might opt to grab something like a weighted blanket or a towel or something that they can like kind of cocoon themselves up in, because that feeling of being able to make themselves small makes them feel safe and it helps calm their nervous system down and helps alleviate the panic attack. I always recommend deep breathing. I always recommend cold exposure of some kind, because cold exposure sends a direct message to your parasympathetic system to kick on. And your parasympathetic system is the system in your nervous system that kind of tells your body to calm down and relax. So the sympathetic side of your nervous system is the side that kind of sends your body up and tells it to kind of be stressed, to be anxious. It's your fight or flight system. And so if that system is turned on, which it is, especially during a panic attack, you kind of want to encourage your parasympathetic side to kick on. And so a way to quickly activate that is through cold exposure. So whether you dunk your head into cold water, you open the freezer and you do deep breathing exercises in front of the freezer, you just grab a cup of water or a ball of ice or just anything to really start to bring yourself down. But it's going to look different for everybody. But the fastest ways to kind of get yourself out of a panic attack are movement, deep breathing, and cold exposure.
Is it possible for somebody who may have not experienced anxiety throughout their life, but maybe events in their life have led them now to be experiencing anxiety and feelings of panic attacks?
Absolutely. Just because you might not have experienced or identified anxiety early on in life, again, anxiety is part of the human spectrum of emotion. And so it is definitely possible that as an adult, you are now experiencing anxiety for the first time. And I really empathize with the people that are in that situation because it can feel terrifying to have maybe pain in your chest or pain in your head and think it's something more physical, to think like, oh my gosh, do I have a heart condition? Or, oh my gosh, do I have a brain tumor? Is there something wrong with me? When really it's a sign of these emotions that are just manifesting as really strong physical reactions in your being.
Is anxiety usually accompanied or brought on by grief? Is that a common thing?
I'm not going to say it's common or uncommon. Again, I think it's different for everybody. So I think it could be important for somebody to look at what they're grieving. You know, are they grieving the loss of something? Or are they grieving just the change of something? You know, anxiety is not uncommon if somebody is going through a grief process, because grief in and of itself is typically a time of transition and change. And anytime you're going through a transition and change, it's natural and normal to feel anxiety. But if you're grieving and you don't feel anxiety, that doesn't make your grief invalid. But again, anxiety is just, it's just a part of being human. And so what triggers it in someone or what brings it up in someone is going to be different for everybody.
It's very interesting. Yeah, I don't know why this story came to my mind and why this was brought up, that I haven't visited this story in many, many, many years. Is this common shit that happens during, quote unquote, maybe my outside of the office therapeutic experience? Because a lot of the questions I fire towards you, I'm sure that you're well aware of, that are coming from thoughts in my mind, right? As you're smiling, yeah. I'm reading your body language as well. Because I know you're doing the same shit to me. We're on a Zoom for the first time. There was a story. We went to a house fire. My partner was Mitch Platt, and we had gone there, and it was a very heartbreaking house fire. Inside the house, all the pets had perished, and they had a lot of pets. And it was a warmer summer night, but looking at this family, and they had been like, hair was burned and they were charred, and they were looking at, like, you know, homeless and like not a place to go, and like their whole world being turned upside down in an instant, losing all these things that they cared about so much. I actually, for the first time in my whole career, and I had been on quite a while at that point, 7-8 years, had to walk around the corner outside of the view of all the public, because there's a big scene, obviously, and I had to cry. And I just came back to that. What do you think I was experiencing at that time, that for somebody who never cries or doesn't cry very often, I'd like to be able to cry more, just kind of not in my composition of that. And that's me being vulnerable here. You know what I mean? Like, there are times where I'm like feeling grief and sadness, and I'm like, man, I wish I could fucking cry and get this out. But like, I'm just not built that way. I don't know. I've always, maybe through physical composition, genetics, and how my life transcended over the 40 years plus I've been on Earth. What do you think brought on that for me?
It's really hard to say. It's interesting, because if this was a therapy session, I would be approaching it much differently. But because we're on a podcast, I'll kind of just come back to my previous statement, which is you were clearly, something kind of touched you in that moment. And I know I keep using the word triggered. I know a lot of officers don't like that word. So something bothered you, something struck at your core in that moment. And so if this was a therapy session, I think we would dig deeper into that as to what what was weighing the most on you in that moment? Like, was it the chaos and the randomness of a fire? Was it seeing how fragile life can be and how quickly things can be taken from you? Was it just the loss of pets? You know, like, what was it, that kind of brought this on?
I think seeing the children and the pen and like in their moment of despair of like them having these, clearly they had been in dealing with this fire at some level and like their hair was burned and shit like that. And like literally almost having nothing in the world at that moment, really, really, I felt a lot of compassion, a lot. I felt very badly for them. And it actually made me, it's usually getting me a little worked up right now as I talk about it, bring me back to that moment. It's the only time in my whole career that I actually walked around the corner and cried. I didn't even tell my partner, but had to get it out for about 5 minutes. I was crying, like I was sobbing, like in the woods. It was actually on a dead end. So I walked around, I found a place that was like quiet in the woods next to a fire extinguisher. Fire hydrant. You ever see like the fire hydrants, like at the end of a block, you know, I was there, that being there and just getting it out and just like releasing it, to get back in and do my job. What happens when cops deal with that, you know?
I think this is a really important thing to talk about because I think officers need to know you're allowed, and in some regards, you should be affected by what you see. Because if you start to become completely unaffected by the pain, the devastation, the loss, the violence of what you see, you know, you're kind of maybe dangerously coming into a territory of not having feeling and not being able to have empathy or understanding for the populations and the communities that you serve. And so when officers do become affected by things that they witness on the job to the point where they are crying or they're thinking about it consistently or whatever the case may be, that's a really good time and opportunity to say, you know what, I think I need to go effectively process this out with somebody, because it's okay to be affected by things. It may, oftentimes it's what makes officers good at their job, because they care, because they don't want to see bad things happen to people. Like, those are all feelings and emotions and characteristics that make cops good. So when you come across something that strikes really deep in you to the point where you are crying about it or angry about it or sad about it, like, that's not a problem. Like, that's not a sign of weakness. Like, that's just a sign that you're a human. You deeply care about the people around you and things are going to affect you. And so when they do come up, those are kind of like a good times to stop and maybe be like, all right, maybe I should go talk about this with someone before another event that deeply affects me gets layered on top of this and another one gets layered on top. And before I know it, like, I'm not dealing with anything well or effectively.
I used to say this thing because I think every cop, every law enforcement officer, every person who works in a field where they're going to experience things that most people won't experience and typically on a regular basis. I'll tell you a story of when I came up with this and why I came up with this and how it helped me is we're put in a lot of positions of like listening to stories of abuse, especially towards children, you know, just constantly being the ear for the victims and having to have compassion with them. And that's really motivated me a lot to do the extra work for these people. But I was felt like if I could do something for them, I should do something for them. And I actually have been complimented by, I'll never forget one compliment I specifically received from a dispatcher who's been there for a long time. I did something above and beyond. And she said to me, you know, I'm doing this 27 years. You're the first person I saw take an extra 10 minutes to make this person's life just that much easier. You could have done what everybody else did. You could have just said, whatever, I'll do what I have to do, the bare minimum. She goes, but you're the first person I saw go above and beyond. And I remember that striking a chord with me, obviously enough so I can remember it. But I used to say this to myself, you know, God chose me to be here, to be the strength for the people who aren't strong enough at the moment. And I'll relay a story of this. And that's what really gave me a lot of strength. Before I left the police department, one of the last jobs I had was ones that I dread, which is finding dead bodies. I fucking hate finding dead bodies. I just can't, like, to me, I just don't like it. It's very creepy to me. It's never like this simple thing. It's always like this horrific. It's not, I'm going to say horrific words in a sense of there's a homicide. It just never is ideal. It's never like just roses and you walk and, oh, there you go. He's confirmed. She's confirmed. It's always terrible. And I pulled up to this house and I was like, oh man, this is definitely going to be one of them, you know? And this woman's outside. And I said, what do you got going on? She goes, well, I came here and his meals are outside. He gets the senior meals and lives by himself and the mail. And I go, yeah, this is it. Call, he's not answering. And I said, did you go in and look for him? And she said, no, I don't want to do that. And I never forget to say to her, I don't either. But I guess this is what I do. Right. And I just remember saying to myself, like, this is exactly why you're here and why God chose you, put you in this position, is because he knew that you had the strength when she didn't to go in and do this. And thankfully enough, that one wasn't too bad. But, you know, what's your thoughts on some of the things that I just said?
Yeah, I think what you're kind of touching on is, and what I'm hearing you say, is that everyone's going to have something. Everyone's going to have something on the job that they're just like, oh, fuck. Like, yeah. I really don't like this. Every time I come into contact with it, it really bothers me in some way, whether it bothers them deeply or bothers them superficially. And so I think it's really important for officers to start to become aware of what is that thing for you. And by the way, like, counselors have this too. Counselors also have things that, you know, if it comes up for them in session with a client, or if they have a client with this presenting issue, it's hard for them. It's hard for them to help that client work through that. And so I think it's really important to just become aware again of, like, what's that thing for you? And when you come up against that thing, what do you have in place to get help or to get support for that? Like, whether it's just another coworker that you talk to and you're like, you know, for you, it's like, oh yeah, fuck. Like, I had another dead body. Like, I hate that. Like, I really, really hate that. You know, even that can go a long way. Or, you know, I obviously encourage all officers to have some form of professional help, like with a therapist. And so even if you just, after you have that call or you come in contact to that thing on shift that dysregulates you in some way, you know, just being able to check in with a therapist real quick and be like, yep, you know, like, had another one of those calls last night, and just be able to process it through in an effective and comprehensive way, that can go really, really far.
So what you're prescribing is acknowledging what our triggers are regarding our own previous traumas.
Yeah. Or just, you know, it might not even have to do anything with, like, for you, you know, I don't know if you had any contact with dead bodies before becoming a cop, but, you know, it's maybe just recognizing for yourself, like, you might not have any past traumas with dead bodies, but there's just something about it. You just don't like it. It just doesn't sit well with you. It's uncomfortable, you know, whatever the case may be. And just becoming more self-aware of what it is that bothers you. Like, what is it that upsets you? And then being able to recognize when you're then put in those situations and then get the help that you need.
That's very, very interesting. I'm, as you're talking, trying to unpack it myself to see where a lot of this comes from. And now that I've been in therapy and have friends that are therapists like yourself, I'm constantly self-reflecting on, why is this doing this to me? Or why do I feel this way about this situation? And obviously some events that have occurred in my life have got me, oddly enough, where I'm kind of thankful that they're happening to me, because I know that I will be strong enough to get through them. I know that. I know that I'm dealing with them and it's not easy. But I think that I'm being put through them for a reason. I think the reason will eventually be to help others and explain that, maybe provide reassurance for others in the future. And I think a therapist does a real nice job at giving and providing reassurance. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, if you're working with the right therapist, it can definitely be a beneficial situation. So yes, like, I agree. Like, a therapist can definitely help provide perspective. They can help the person more effectively deal with the emotions that they're experiencing, or just make sense of what's going on for them. I find this particularly with the officers I deal with, is that so, in the clients that I have, so often there's so many situations going on at the same time that are, some of them are connected or overlapping, or they layer with each other, and the emotions are so high in each and every one of these situations that oftentimes they don't even have the time or the opportunity or the mental space to make sense of what's going on for them. And so oftentimes a therapist can kind of be that neutral third party to say, okay, let's take a step back. Let's evaluate what you're actually thinking and feeling with each of these situations. And so it can kind of be a therapy session, you know, it can almost be like a break or that only opportunity that a person has to even take the time to evaluate what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and then potentially what they want to do about it.
Do you think that sometimes people aren't allowed to process how they feel, especially in a professional environment like police work? There's one scenario in my mind that I'm coming up with, and I'll try to keep it very vague because I don't think a victim of even their own circumstance deserves to be used as an example on a media platform. But it's very easy to see that new guys and girls who wear the badge and go to these jobs, they try to acclimate to the environment that they're in. And if they don't acclimate, then you're an outcast. They may be seeing something very different. They're having different feelings than other people. There are things that are very traumatic. And I think some people it doesn't affect, some people it does. And you may go to a traumatic event and have somebody who's very lighthearted about the whole thing and maybe making jokes about the whole thing. And I don't mean jokes in a sense of that they're immoral jokes, but it may be bothersome. But the game is you have to play along to be accepted, because I think what we're looking for as cops, especially new ones, is social acceptance. What's your thoughts around me saying things like that?
Yeah, it's really hard. And it's especially hard, you know, for the low men on the totem pole in their department. And I don't know what's more difficult, working for a big department or working for a small department. I would almost lean towards it's probably harder working for a small department because there's only so many people you can find and in with, you know, like you're limited. And so maybe working for a big department is better because you have opportunities to find your people that you connect with, that you want to fit in with. Whereas with a small department, if there's only 20 of you, there's only 20 of you, like that's a small culture. But in terms of like kind of laughing off traumatic events or, you know, making light of it, I think it just goes back to kind of the old cliche, like if you don't laugh about it, you're going to cry about it. And so I see this a lot with, you know, officers typically tend to have a very dark sense of humor, which I completely understand. Ironically, so do therapists, because we hear and we see so many horrific things. Obviously, officers see more of it up front. And, you know, they see a lot more awful, like physical things, like in the moment, a lot more traumas. And so you kind of sometimes as a way of just like coping with it or making understanding of it or not letting it necessarily overpower or overtake you in the moment, they make a joke about it to be able to move on, to be able to continue on with their shift, to be able to at least put it to the side. And so again, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing because I think it's a way of coping. However, I still think it's important to do maybe what you need to do to get through that moment or to get through that really difficult call, but then you still got to get help. Like it can't just end with I coped to get through the moment, but then I didn't actually process what it meant to me. And so I think there's a really kind of like large misunderstanding in our society that coping with something in the moment means that you are healed from it and it doesn't bother you and it didn't bother you. And that's not the case. Being able to cope and get through the moment is not the same as being able to, again, effectively and comprehensively process through something. So that way it doesn't have long-term consequences on your physical and mental health.
As you talk and I listen, oh, so many things coming up for me. Very interesting. So yeah, it's very interesting. Very, very interesting. But I'm not gonna make this about me. When I first became a cop, this is 21 years ago almost, you know, mental health wasn't discussed at all. Matter of fact, physical health was discussed on your first day of the academy. Every academy went to, your first class was physical fitness. And this is basically how it went. Calisthenics are good. Drink a glass of water before you go to bed. And that was about it. I mean, that was literally, that's all I can remember from how much training we received in that. Lately, mental health has been brought up and seems to be getting somewhat addressed. The question I have for you is somewhat addressing it actually addressing it when we lightly touch on the topic and offer these academic small courses that are meant to be a band-aid in the moment? What's a real good piece of advice for a police officer who probably is realizing they can't depend on their administration or the state of that they work in or the government to provide them what the adequate training they need to learn and understand what mental health is? What's some good advice?
I'm going to say this generally because I obviously don't know what every police department's mental health programming is. But from my perspective, from what I've seen and from what I've heard, both with the officers that I work with and from officers who have reached out to me through social media after my class videos have been posted or I've posted something, from my perspective, it just seems like most of the information and the help that's being given by departments is probably, from my perspective, about 10 years outdated. And so I think it's just really important to know and understand, like, by the time, and the reason for that, I should probably preface this, the reason for that is because oftentimes state agencies, government agencies, you know, whoever funds the police department, they want what's called evidence-based curriculum. And really what that means is, like, it's a program or research or guidance or a training program that has quote unquote evidence and research behind it to show that it worked. The problem with that is that these programs take incredible amounts of time to roll out and incredible amounts of time to kind of come to fruition. And so by the time they actually make it to the officers, the mental health field has actually surpassed it. And so I would highly, highly, highly encourage officers, where the trending research is that in order to get effective trauma therapy, the entire being needs to be brought into the session. And so what that means is that for years and years, and most of the guidance is actually still coming down from police departments with whatever in-house programs they have, is that it's like this talk it out mentality. Talk it out, talk it out, talk it out. And where the actual current research and understanding of trauma is that that's not effective. And the reason that that's not effective is because sometimes talking about the trauma and talking about what's happened to you actually deepens the neural pathways that perpetuate the symptoms of the trauma. And so really what needs to be happening is you need to be doing brain-based therapies to rewire your hardware and to bring about different thoughts, behaviors, and outcomes. And so for any officer that's listening, and spoiler alert, this is basically my whole class. So congratulations, you all get it for free now. Like, this is what you need to be searching out. You need to be searching out brain-based therapies, and that is EMDR. That's been really popular. It's called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. There's also biofeedback treatment, and there's also brain spotting. And so what those therapies do is they allow the client to be able to access where the brain is holding on to these traumas for them. And so it allows you to access those traumas, bring them to the surface, and help bring your brain from a physical state of dysregulation to regulation. And so the reason I go on that whole long tangent is because I know for a fact, 9 times out of 10, the information you officers are being given by their departments is, yeah, it's really good to talk about it. Yeah, get help. Yeah, don't be addicted. And it's like, okay, well, what the fuck does that mean? Like, let's go. Like, let's really get to the heart of things. And so I think it's better that departments are in a spot where they're more open to talking about mental health, but I just feel like it's really not a comprehensive conversation that's happening. And my goal and my hope is that there's more of a comprehensive conversation happening about the actual modern understanding of trauma and what the treatment for that can look like.
What I heard was inaction is not action. You need to actually have an action plan.
Yeah, you do need to actually have an action plan, but I have a lot of empathy because if I'm being honest, like, mental health has become very trendy. It honestly, like, pisses me off, like, to no end. Like, I think it was really good for a while that we were having more conversations about mental health and, like, why it's important and all that jazz. But now it's like this weird kind of space that we're in as a society where it's almost like trendy to, like, have a mental health issue. And I'm like, okay, no, like that is not the space that we should be in. And so I have a lot of empathy right now, especially for officers, if they're in desperate need of authentic help, there's almost like way too much information out there. And some of it's not great. Some of it's really not great information. And so I understand that some of them might want to take action, but they don't even know where to start or the guidance of where they got where to start. Like I said, it's about like 10 years outdated. And so that's really difficult. But I would definitely encourage them to look up, you know, have resources such as there's a really great book, The Body Keeps the Score. And that really talks about how the traumatic events that people go through, it doesn't just affect thoughts and feelings, it affects their physical being. And oftentimes what officers are experiencing, it's not just mental health disruptions, it's also disruptions to their entire physical health and their physical being. And so that's a really great resource for them. And then if they're just interested in doing any type of work around this, like I said, I would encourage them to look up those types of therapies in their area, EMDR, biofeedback, and brain spotting.
We've talked about this kind of treatment before, and typically you said that why it's so effective is because you can get a lot accomplished in a short period of time or a shorter period of time as compared to traditional therapeutic sessions. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
So I'm about to get like a little nerdy with this because it's like a little, it's not a little neuroscience. It's actually a lot neuroscience. So if there's anything I say that you're like, you lost me, just like wave a hand. But generally speaking, so I'm actually certified in brain spotting. And the general concept and understanding of why we need to be incorporating the whole being into treatment and why these brain-based therapies are so effective is because if you were to look at your brain, and I'll hold up my hand here. So if you were to look up your brain, this part of your brain, this front part of your brain is called the neocortex. And your neocortex is your rational brain. So it's the part of your brain that gets you to appointments, it schedules throughout your day, it tells you when you got to pick up your kids and all this different stuff. And that's great. And talk therapy mostly targets your neocortex, so this top part of your brain. But the problem is that most people for trauma, their trauma is stored in this part of your brain, the mid part of your brain, which is called the subcortical region of your brain. And it's also known as the limbic system. So in your limbic system, that is where emotion and feeling is held for people. And this is oftentimes where the traumatic events are being stored for an individual. And so the reason that you need to incorporate something like EMDR, eye movement desensitization or reprocessing, or brain spotting, is because it allows the individual to access this part of the limbic system, because talking cannot reach there. And so you need to incorporate your body and your being into the session to be able to access that part of your brain. And through a lot of research and understanding, the way you access that part of the brain is actually through your eyes. And so I almost encourage people to kind of think of like your eyes as like, they're almost like little blobs of your brain, like on the outside of your body. And the reason I say that is because your eyes have so many neurons that connect directly to your brain. And through a lot of research and understanding now, we see that where your eyes look and how they move directly connect and correlate to different spots of your brain. And they can drop down into that limbic system and help bring about a greater and more complete healing experience for people. Because you're not just when you use, you know, your eyes to access these parts of your brain, you bring the whole being into the session. What you're really doing is you're also allowing for the ability to your brain to rewire its circuitry. Because when somebody is in a dysregulated state, your neurons and your neural pathways are firing in a way that do not work for you. And so what you really need to do is you can't talk your neural pathways into being better. Well, I shouldn't say that. You can, but it takes a very long time. And so what these therapies allow is for a rewiring and a recircuitry of the brain to alleviate these painful memories, alleviate these painful emotions and experiences, and bring about a more complete healing experience for people.
Recently, somebody I know, I think I brought this up in a previous podcast, after a lifetime of anxiety and debilitating, as a matter of fact, to the point where it affected all parts of their life, decided it's some enough to come across and take initiative and actually discover a medication that ended up helping that person dramatically. And now will say to me, you know, I'm so angry at myself for waiting so long because I've never felt so good. And I think people have a real hang up on medication being something you may have to lean on at first, at least to try to feel better. So I think I'm saying this in a sense to try, because I really am desperate to try to motivate people who are in pain to get help. What's your thoughts, or what would you say to somebody who's apprehensive about maybe getting prescribed the medication, who needs it at least to start?
Yeah, I would definitely just say like there should be no hesitation. If the symptoms are, again, if we're talking about this in the context of anxiety, if the symptoms are so great for you, that you are not able to participate in your life in an effective manner, yes, like get a medication. And I'm very pro that for my clients, for officers. You know, you need something sometimes to kind of dial down the intensity of what you're experiencing so that you can even participate maybe in therapy and be able to work through the pain of what it is that you're going through. But my message to anyone going on a medication is that the medication alone will not fix the problem. It just will not. And so oftentimes medication treats the symptom, but again, extreme anxiety, extreme depression, they're oftentimes a symptom of a deeper issue that has not been resolved. And so my message to anyone or my encouragement to anyone would be, if you feel like you need the medication, definitely go on the medication. But my recommendation is that medication, if you are on a medication, should always be being coupled with some sort of effective therapy, because the effective therapy is what's ultimately going to help alleviate the root cause of what's perpetuating these symptoms for you. But there should be no hesitation. It's, I don't even know what the statistics are now, but so many people are on medication. Like there's almost no stigma for it from my perspective anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think people maybe are embarrassed about being on a medication like that, scared of the side effects of the medication. Yeah. There's a lot of hangups of the medication itself, but you know, I use this example of somebody that I know personally who feels like they got their life back, you know, and yeah. Like a complete control.
Yeah. No, it can be instantaneous. You know, like people can experience, I think for most medications, generally speaking, it takes like 4 weeks to feel the full effect of them. But for some people, it's like immediate, like the intensity of whatever it is that they're experiencing is just dialed down so significantly. And that's great. Like that makes me so happy for people. You know, I recently had a client who was really, really struggling and to the point where they were struggling to participate in a therapy session due to the intensity of their feelings and emotions. And they had made the decision that they wanted to go on a medication. They found a provider, which is great for them. And now they're able to get more out of therapy because they're not just dealing with the constant immediate demands of the symptoms of what they're experiencing. And to me, that's great. like that's great. Like, you know, if you're at the point too, like if you're evaluating for yourself, if you're at the point where you're like, I can't even get anything out of therapy because my mind is racing, my heart is racing, I feel panicky, I can't get to the appointment. Yes. Like maybe it's time to then consider a medication, but consider a medication with the thought process of this doesn't necessarily replace therapy. Like there still is work that needs to be done around that. From my perspective,
I've heard often of people getting on medication and being weaned off the medication once they were able to cope and find management skills for their anxiety and stress.
100%. You know, and again, this is a very personal journey. It can be different for everybody. There's definitely a lot of stories of people weaning off medication and living very successful lives. Medication, great. But for other people, they feel more comfortable staying on some sort of dosage, whether it's a high dose, low dose, medium dose, like whatever the case may be. And I think it's just really important for people to remember, like, this is your life, your journey, it's your mental health. There is no one size fits all. There just isn't. And so again, you know, you need to talk this out with your doctors and with your therapist to figure out what's right for you. But if you sit and listen to your gut and listen to your intuition long enough, like you'll know what's right and just follow that and don't compare your story to anyone else's or your journey.
Yeah, I think that's always the intention of these podcasts, to try to find resolve for people who are listening. And I know there's a lot of you out there who hear this, and I really wanted to speak with you because we do care. We want to see you feel better. And this is not there's no upside for us in this other than the fact that maybe we have the information that you need to help you make that decision that will help your life. And like Hannah said earlier, don't let the anxiety build, because, you know, it can lead down a path of some real, real significant circumstances, you know, and ultimately what we're trying to avoid is police suicide.
Yeah, 100%. You know, officers are just so susceptible to so many different types of mental health issues due to the nature of their job and the demands of their job. And so it's just really important to just start with early intervention and start even maybe before you think you need it. Like if there's anyone that's currently like in the academy or even just contemplating a career in law enforcement and they're listening to this podcast, literally start now. Go find someone now. Go find a therapist that you click with. Go find anyone and just have them on call, on standby, because you might not think that you need it. But if I'm being honest, that's really naive. It is really naive to think that you're going to work in this field or have this type of career and that nothing is ever going to come up that bothers you or that's going to affect you in any sort of way. And so set yourself up for success now by putting those supports in place so that when these things do come up, it's not a mad scramble to find someone or try to immediately get help or get relief or to seek out relief through other avenues that maybe aren't as beneficial to you, such as alcohol or any other sort of addiction, food addiction, video games, like all those things greatly affect somebody's life just as much, you know, as alcohol as well. So put those supports in place now, maybe before you even think you need them.
When you said that, interestingly enough, I had a slight unlock. I don't know if it's a significant one. It's probably just a slight one to a bigger significance that I probably am already aware of. But I guess what I've unlocked just now is I'm motivated by the pain I see in the cops that I know. And I'm gonna start with just my friends who were still cops. And I had somebody over my house recently for the 4th of July. And, you know, I just at the moment didn't see the pain in his face. And just at this moment saw the pain in his face. I just reflect back to when I asked him about how things were. And at the time, you know, it was 4th of July, a lot going on. We had a big party in the house. And I think that really drives me to be the voice or the engine behind, like, God, we got to make this better. You know, we can't just continue to like let this thing cycle over and over again in this viciousness of this profession.
I agree. You know, I think there's a lot of officers that know that there needs to be change. They know that it needs to happen. And in terms of mental health, it starts with you. Like it starts with the officers. Like if you don't like the conversations that are being had about mental health, if you don't like the stigma or the fact that so many of your like brothers and sisters in this job are losing their lives or not doing well or burning out or having really chaotic or painful lives, like start talking to each other and start being like, yo, like, what can I do? Like, what do you need? Do you need a referral? Like if you have a therapist that you work with and that you like, and you think somebody on your shift or in your department is struggling, give them the referral. Like don't gatekeep that stuff. Like start helping each other and start authentically checking in with each other. And this is actually something my husband, he might be annoyed with it for, but I'm always asking him like, oh, like how are like his friends, like his coworkers at the department? And he's like, oh, they're good. And I'm like, no, how are they really? Like, are they really good? Like, are they okay? Like, how are their significant others? Do they seem happy? Like, do they seem, you know, like they're doing genuinely okay, not are they just showing up to work? And the reason I do that is because I'm like, I know he cares about them. These are people that I also now know and I care about. And I'm like, if they need help, like just say something. Like I'd be more than happy to help them get any sort of help that they need. And again, from my perspective, like it needs to start now. Like it needs to start while they're, my husband's pretty early on in his career still. And so I'm like, it needs to start now while you guys are young, you know, because before you know it, you are 8, 9, 10 years on the job and it's all just built up and nothing's going well anymore. And so for the officers listening, like authentically check in with each other and don't be afraid to even call each other out and be like, you know, like I'm really concerned. Like you just like seem off, like something seems wrong. Like, can I help you in any way? What do you need? You know, those conversations need to be happening with each other. And that's really a way to start turning this conversation about mental health and to really start changing the culture of how officers like operate.
I will sometimes pick up on somebody that I know who is not well or is in some pain. And I, you know, obviously, again, I've dealt with some pretty significant life traumas in the past 20 months of my life. And they continue to pile on as God testing me a little bit, checking out my resiliency levels. I don't know what the fuck he's preparing me for, but you know, so I did have to see a therapist to learn about a lot of things in my life. And I'm very quick because I don't feel like I go there and I'm judged. I don't feel like, as a matter of fact, at this point now, I just continue to go just to have a conversation more than anything. I don't think there's a lot of, I'm pretty fortunate enough to be able to manage and am aware of a lot of things outside of my own brain of like, okay, this is why you're doing that. This is, so I think beyond that. Now I've said to people, because I am fond of the woman that I see, hey, here's her number. Give her a shout. Probably three or four people at this point. I don't believe anybody's reached out to her. And these people who are at the moment, self-admittedly, should probably be seeing somebody. Why does that happen?
I think there's a lot of fear. I think there's a lot of fear for a lot of officers. You know, there's still, unfortunately, probably at a lot of departments, you know, the higher ups maybe have come from a culture and a generation where mental health was still not talked about. So even if it's being talked about now, maybe not everyone at the department believes in that, or they kind of look down on it or make jokes about it or whatever the case may be. And so I think for a lot of officers, there is a lot of fear, not just about what the experience is going to be like, but also like, oh, fuck, like what's going to come up, you know? And so I think it's really understandable that so many people, they know they need help, they know they want help, and there's still this hesitancy to take that step. But like one of the hopes and the goals that, you know, I have with the work that I'm doing with Street Cop is like, I hope it comes across as like, oh, this isn't really that intimidating. Like, oh, like I listened to Hannah on the podcast. Like she doesn't really seem that scary. Like maybe I would be okay, like sitting down with someone like her, or maybe all therapists aren't so, you know, unemotional or like not relatable or something like that. And so I think it's really important for officers to know, like there are therapists out there that you'll probably like click with, and that it probably won't feel like too scary or too overwhelming of a process for them, but it's just about being kind of brave enough like to take that step. And just like there might be things on the job, like how you said earlier, like, oh, this isn't something I really want to do, like going into this house with this dead body, but it's something I kind of have to do. Sometimes it could be the same mindset with therapy. Like, oh, like I can't really believe I'm in this spot. I can't really believe I want to do this, but all right, I'm going to take this step because I feel like, you know, that alternative to not taking this step isn't a really great quality of life for myself.
For me, even as simple as just getting answers for things that I didn't have answers to, of why things were happening in my life the way they were. And that was, that helped me, you know, like I was like, oh, okay, now I understand this. And I've actually learned a lot more about compassion, a lot. And I'm happy, I'm thankful for it. You know what I mean? It's a real big resourceful tool that I pulled out of these things of learning about how to be compassionate and non-judgmental. It's very, very big for me. And I think that it's been a blessing in some sense as a leader of an organization that's continued to grow to be able to display the characteristics of compassion if I want that to be the change for the future.
No, I 100% agree with what you're saying. And I think that's a really great message for a lot of officers is that there's always something. Like there is always something that you can be improving on and trying to find a higher ground with. You know, mental health is not really a destination. It's always a journey. And so there's always going to be stuff on this journey to kind of address, evaluate, look through and work through. And so for a lot of officers, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, you go in there and you just start talking about traumas right away. Like you can talk about maybe some other things of like, you know, maybe more manageable thoughts or feelings or emotions or instances that you want to work on before you kind of jump into those deeper topics. But, you know, you're, as long as you have like breath in your body and you're living, there's stuff to be working on. And that shouldn't be discouraging because as you start to improve and operate better mentally and emotionally, you know, it kind of, from my perspective and for the clients that I work with, because I see this with them, it kind of becomes like an exciting thing for them to be like, wow, like how much more better can I be? Like, wow, look at the progress that I've made in 3 months. I wonder what I'll look like in 6 months. I wonder how much happier and fulfilled I'll be like if I continue on this path. And so it should never be like a discouraging thing of like, yeah, there's always going to be something, you know, it should be kind of like an exciting thing because it just means like for the rest of your life, like you, there's always something to be doing. Like there's always something to be addressing.
Do you have a lot of people reaching out to you looking for advice? Do you get that a lot?
In my personal life?
I'm saying like through the Street Cop platform and all that.
I wouldn't say a ton. I'm like horrendous with social media. So admittedly, like I'm not really on it a lot, but I have had some people just reach out and ask general questions and stuff, for anyone that is listening, because I am an active and practicing therapist, I can't really address specifically like individual things, but I can give general guidance or perspective, kind of like what I do in the class or on the podcast, just with the knowledge that, you know, it's still a personal journey and everyone's got to figure out their own path in their own way. But there's been a few messages here and there.
I don't have much more for this. I'm kind of coming strong because I have other thoughts on my mind at the moment. But you have anything else you want to do?
No, I think that was good. I think it was a good topic. Yeah.
I just want to thank again, nobody's receiving compensation for this time, and time is very precious. And Hannah Heyman cares enough to show up here, you know, weekly or semi-weekly or whatever it is that she has carved out of her busy, busy schedule to come in and try to help the masses of law enforcement. So on behalf of the law enforcement community, you know, it's appreciated. I don't think we can express our appreciation enough. And I know that even one person finding the value in this is going to make it worth its while. I think we'll come from the same place of we really want to help. So thanks for being here again.
Thank you for having me.